Give me black ravens to kindle the sun. A Critical Role fan fiction, written by Gray Into the Green, read by God of Laundry Baskets for Voice Team 2024 for Team Quack. It is rated Gen and features Kiri. Kiri thinks she's going to be an artificer. It's a sort of vague decision that forms in the back of her mind that, of course, with her limited vocabulary, she cannot voice properly. She strings phrases together to try and explain it to the Schusters, and, eventually, they figure it out enough to send her to Clef Tinkertop, who has become a family friend. The Mighty Nine left a vague impression on the town of Hupperdook, but most only know them as the arseholes who won the Hour of Honor and then never came back to defend their title. Only the Schuster family and the Tinkertops think to call them heroes, and they bond over it every week during special dinners. It's in the smaller deeds for individuals that the Mighty Nine get recognized for, but that's another story that isn't Kiri's to tell. The point is, Kiri goes to Clef's every afternoon and learns to build things. She starts with a music box. She's so proud to tell Jester about it when she sends to her and hopes one day she'll see it. Soon, she's working towards new inventions, copying Clef's plans and then improving upon them. As it turns out, she's not just a vocal mimic, but a technical one, too. She learns by copying, and then strings all her mimicked bits into something cohesive and whole and 100% her. By the time she's a teenager, she's done three families proud. The Nine visit her after all. Her second and most loved family, for the mercy and care they showed her and all that they taught her when she was little and lonely. They come to Hupperdook every year together and visit off and on separately. She does not go with them, even though they ask her to. Not because she doesn't love them, but because she wants to stay close to the workshop that Clef built for her so she can keep creating. A Kenku does not create, you see. A Kenku can only repeat, and yet she has done it. She has somehow managed to yank herself out of a bloodline curse. Kiri is sure she is going to be an artificer. But a Kenku cannot create. The curse will always find a way to course correct when it has been subverted. No spell or miracle or accidental shift in a little girl's star can stop it from taking hold. In the end, it isn't because Kiri lost the ability, only the desire. She has known unfairness in her life. But when Crown's Guard raid the Tinkertop workshop and either take or destroy his inventions, and hers as well, for reasons she is too young to understand, she finds herself at a loss as to why this could be allowed. Staring at the broken pieces of a music box, the first thing she ever created, she becomes livid and hopeless. She picks up a dagger. Not the same as the first thing the Nine gave her, but useful nonetheless, and starts again. She leaves Hupperdook, old enough to leave her nest, and seeks out the Nine. Jester is there to hold her. Veth, formerly Nott, is there to teach her. And she is grateful to have a face to the name of Yessa, who only existed in a remembered sentence she had never had cause to say until the moment she meets the real version. She heals with them, but her heartbreak never truly goes away, and she cannot bring herself to create again. She's careful how she strings her phrases together, like her voice will be taken too if she's too clever. There are times when she does not talk at all. She is still a young, happy thing, blossoming into a woman. Her knives are sharp, and she hunts monsters alongside Veth when she gets an itch. She befriends Luke and his little sister, and they age into adults together. She does not become upset when, thanks to Yessa, Veth, and her own input, the little halfling girl becomes the artificer she thought she ought to be. She is happy to have taught someone something. That teaching scares her, however. Perhaps the curse will see that as an invitation to bring doom upon her again. She leaves a note and an apology and boards a ship to Vasselheim and then to Tal'Dorei. People look at her strangely. In Vasselheim, in Emmon, in the small town by the road. It's only when she gets to Whitestone that she understands. A raven woman with daggers, like a figure out of a dream, like a second coming. She is, quite impossibly, invited into the home of the heads of the city, where she sees a painting of a handsome man in a cloak of black feathers. He wields two daggers, just like her. The lady of the house, who looks so much like the man in the portrait, tells her his story, and Ciri sees herself in it. Abandonment, loss, horrible experiences that did not break him, but somehow made him all the more kinder. He had given everything for the sake of the world and his family. He did not fear bad luck. Ciri weeps in this stranger's home, and the woman weeps with her. And there is hope in this simple gesture. Ciri stays in their home for a few days. She meets the woman's husband and their children. She is introduced to his tinker's shop. She builds another music box. Ciri will never become an artificer. She is satisfied by being what the world will call the second coming of Vaxeldon, a copy of another legacy. So she doesn't think the natural order of things will take it from her because of a frustrating Kenku's curse. But she no longer fears her ability to create. She will challenge the world just as Vaxeldon did. Unfortunate experiences be damned. She will not let it dictate who she can and cannot be. She is Ciri Schuster of the Mighty Nine. She is a flash of raven feathers and a glint of cold steel. She is blood on stone and a protector of the small and defenseless. She is a songbird's melody played on a music box, constantly repeated, and the hope that even as generations pass, certain things will never truly fade away, because they can always be mimicked. The end. Thank you for listening. And as we say every time with Team Quack, quack early, quack often, quack.